Hey, good morning, everybody. So it's my pleasure, and I'm grateful to be here with all of you to continue exploring how to change your life. And the chapter is called Better Living Now. So, I mean, many of you know I've been going through some grieving and such, with Junior suddenly leaving, and then I was also laid off a few weeks before that. I haven't shared that really just because I didn't really want a bunch of people kind of in that mindset of feeling sorry for me, so I didn't really share that. But so when thinking about this chapter, Better Living Now, it's like, huh, okay. I see what Spirit's trying to do here, and Ernest is, yeah, really? Now? Right now? Like, right now, now? Like, even if I'm experiencing grief, and even if I'm trying to do my resume while I'm, like, eating peanut butter toast for dinner, I mean, now, really? So, one of the things that came to me, well, I'm going to be sharing some personal stuff. I'm going to be also pulling out principles. Like, this talk really is for me. So, sorry. Hopefully, you'll get something out of it. But I'll share a little personal stuff. I'll pull out some of the principles and then talk a little bit more about what Better Living Now means and some practical applications. So, it's going to be a whole big old thing. And because I was kind of concerned about getting through the talk because I've been so emotional lately that I did kind of like write up a lot of it, which I don't normally do. So one of the things was that sometimes I feel like, we unconsciously make an agreement or spiritual agreement with life that is like, I will feel peace after things improve. I'll trust God after I get clarity. I'll feel whole after the relationship heals. I'll feel secure after the job appears. I'll feel joy after the grief passes. But Holmes keeps bringing us back to something pretty radical, Life is not waiting to begin later. Life's not waiting to begin later. The presence is not postponed. The divine is not withholding itself until circumstances become prettier. And, that sounds, beautiful philosophically until life sometimes comes along and find yourself with a broken heart. So yeah, last year, Junior, it was a last minute call that I got to foster a 3-week-old infant who had been substance exposed. And hepatitis C exposed. He was 3 weeks old in NICU. He was only 5 pounds and like 12 ounces or something. And I picked him up that night from the hospital. Oh my goodness, just this itty bitty, like you just fit right in the little pocket of your elbow there, And over time, I mean, you can't help but fall in love with this sweetness, and I was, had to learn massage and things for him to help the things that go on in the body when you have had substances in them as an infant. So, I was doing that, 2 and 3 times a day, and first 3 months he really wasn't sleeping much, so kind of got to see I would dance with him all the time. And it would take 3, 4 songs sometimes in the beginning, for him to fall asleep. And through those 3 months, we discovered that, he had acid reflux, and we also changed his formula. And like, apparently this is something young babies often will have for a period of time. Once we put him on some medication and stuff, things improved. But so anyway, so over 8 months, my world kind of evolved around him. Every feeding, every developmental milestone, learning the massage, learning how to support, him with all the other things that are going on from his circumstances, and just trying to make sure he felt safe, and loved and held and protected, and he became woven into the fabric of my life. I mean, he just, it was all about him. He's an infant, what can you do there? So, I mean, and then suddenly, with really, very little time to kind of prepare emotionally, he was transitioned to live with family, and it happened a lot quicker. So, I was kind of in shock. Still kind of in shock, but overnight the house just became quiet. The routines disappeared. The future that, kind of was living towards or trying to, keep up with as far as him, it just kind of, disappeared. And what made it even harder was, not knowing how he was doing it afterwards. And that's still the case, even though he did kind of show up as a little, dish soap bubble the other day, just kind of float, teeny tiny, just floating around my head. I was like, oh, this is the first kind of time I felt that. And so anyway, and like I said, around the same time I was laid off from my job. So, there I was, grieving, feeling uncertain, trying to prepare for interviews, trying to function normally, and trying to practice some spiritual principles, which Connie really helped me with that, because that's hard to do when you're in that space, and feeling stuck and kind of frozen, not knowing what to do. So, excuse me, sorry. Anyway, there are times that I have felt, especially early on in Science of Mind, that, when you're learning that your thoughts create and all of that good stuff, it's kind of like, people would say, well, what did you do or what did you think to create that? And I came to really dislike that statement. It created some kind of pressure, or like somehow I wasn't, doing it right. So anyway, I, even in those moments where I don't feel spiritually majestic, like I don't feel like I have it all together, and so, and that phrase, I always felt like it creates spiritual guilt, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not doing it good enough, I'm not doing it right. And so I'd like to, which is why I'm kind of sharing a little bit about my own personal journey in the last few months, is because I think it's important for us to recognize that it's okay to be where we are, and it's okay to, people keep telling me to give yourself some grace. So anyway, there are moments where, I still feel heartbroken. There are moments where I know the principles intellectually, but emotionally, I'm, been struggling to find solid ground. And yet, something deeper, never completely disappears. Something underneath the grief remains. It's not loud. It's not dramatic. But it's quietly present, like a candle that's still burning, but it's in another room. And that presence is what Holmes points us towards again and again. Ernest Holmes says, life is a mirror and reflects back to the thinker what he thinks into it. Life is a mirror and reflects back to the thinker what he thinks into it. Now, sometimes this can be misunderstood a little bit. Science of mind is not saying if something painful happens, you failed spiritually. That's not compassion, and it's just not true. And what Holmes is teaching is that consciousness shapes experience. The law responds to our dominant inner atmosphere. And many of us spend years unknowingly living from fear, scarcity, unworthiness, waiting, self-judgment, or the belief that good is always somewhere else. But spiritual practice begins changing the inner conversation because the universe responds to consciousness, not performance, not perfection, consciousness. And one of the most healing realizations for me has been this: I do not have to wait until my heart feels completely repaired before I can begin aligning with peace again. I read that again. I do not have to wait until my heart feels completely repaired before I begin aligning with peace again. And that changed something for me because I kept unconsciously believing that once I feel better emotionally, then I can trust life again. But what if peace is not the reward at the end of the healing? What if peace is part of the healing itself? Holmes says, we already live in a perfect universe, but we see it through our own mental concepts. So it means that doesn't mean that painful things do not happen, obviously. It means that the divine presence remains intact even when our human experience feels shattered. There is still one life, one mind, one presence. And that presence is not absent from grief. It's not absent from uncertainty. It is not absent from our financial concerns, our relationship struggles, our health challenges, or fear about the future. Spirit doesn't say, come back when you're emotionally organized. On back. No, Spirit says, I am here now. I am here now. So, what does better living now actually mean? I don't think it means pretending everything is wonderful. I think it means choosing alignment in this moment. Now. Not someday. Now. It means beginning to speak differently to ourselves. Now. Blessing our circumstances now, choosing possibility now, recognizing our worth now, trusting life a little more now. Not because appearances guarantee success, but because our divine nature is already intact. Our divine nature is already intact. And this is where manifestation becomes deeply spiritual, not transactional. Manifestation is not, how do I force the universe to give me stuff? It's, how do I align with the truth of who I already am? Because from that consciousness, ideas emerge, guidance appears, opportunities unfold, healing begins, relationships shift, and clarity returns. Demonstration often starts invisibly, like seeds under the ground. You know, if you've ever planted something, you know that the soil looks suspiciously empty for a while. We're still like, is it happening? Is it happening? But life is moving underneath. So I want to offer a few practical applications. It's not necessarily spiritual homework. These are just some things if you want to have some ideas. Number one, notice your inner language. How are you speaking to yourself today? Would you speak to someone you love the way you sometimes speak to yourself? The law is always listening. Number two, practice blessing your current life. Even the unfinished parts, even the uncertain parts. Not because everything feels easy, but because divine presence is still active there. Divine presence is still active there. Number three, stop postponing your wholeness. You are not becoming worthy. You are remembering worthiness. That's very different. Number four, begin acting from possibility again. Maybe just one small step, one application, one phone call, one walk outside, one moment of gratitude, one new affirmation. Tiny movements matter spiritually. So I know that I remember when we did the grief section in practitioner studies. I remember how powerful it was. And people are experiencing grief even like when you lose your keys, there's just loss comes in all kinds of ways. And so, a lot of people, you know, some people are grieving right now. You know, some are grieving their dreams, some are grieving identities, their health, certainty, or versions of life that they thought would continue. And sometimes we quietly believe if I were more spiritual, or if I trusted more, this wouldn't hurt so much. But love is why it hurts. And the willingness to keep our hearts open anyway, that is spiritual courage. Not denial, not perfection, presence. And maybe better living begins the moment we stop asking, why is this happening to me? And begin asking, how can I allow divine life to live through me here? How can I allow divine life to live through me here? Because there's still life seeking expression through us, through me, through you. Still beauty, still purpose, still creativity, still love, still possibility. You are not abandoned by life, even now, especially now. So today I simply want to remind all of us that there is something within you that circumstances cannot erase. A divine presence that exists before fear, before grief, before limitation, before any appearance told you that you were less than whole. And maybe spiritual practice is not about becoming someone new. Maybe it's about relaxing enough to remember who we have always been. Holmes teaches us change your thinking, change your life. Not because we manipulate God, but because we awaken to the presence already living through us. We awaken to the presence already living through us. And that presence is still creating, still healing, still guiding, still loving. And so it is.